Let's give a warm welcome to our warm-up speaker, Monty.
Morning, I'm alcoholic. Pat, right, asked me just a couple minutes ago, so I'll put him on blast. You know what I mean? So it's probably best that I don't know stuff's going to happen, so I can just go with the flow. I'm a really grateful alcoholic, man. You know, some people might think that's kind of weird, but, you know, everything that I went through in my life has got me to where I'm at today, man, and I had to die in order to live. You know, the four paradoxes of AA, man, I try to live by them, man. You know, I hang out with a guy that has been teaching me, man, ever since I met him. I've had more fun in the last 3 months than I've had. It should be illegal. And it's completely sober. You know, we go to the lake, we ride an air chair. I'm losing weight. You know, I'm getting stronger. You know, and it's a direct result of hanging out with somebody that, you know, works a program, you know, in my eyes. You know, I insist on living life, man, and enjoying life. I didn't get to where I'm at today to be miserable. You know, I was miserable out there drinking because I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't know how to stop. You know, and I used to always think that I had to be like my Uncle David Looper. You know, God rest your soul, thank you for never giving up on me, man. He came to see me in prison, man, and you know, I used to always think that I had to be a drunk like him. Shit, I was worse than him. You know, he never ended up in prison. He went to jail a lot of times, but he never ended up in prison. You know, I used to think you had to get kicked out of the cop car in front of Granny's front lawn, you know, to be that type of drunk. And I used to wake up in my own vomit in people's lawns. I didn't even know whose house I was at. You know, this is by doing some research and kind of remembering stuff that happened over the years, you know, in a four-step, you know, I got to see, man, that I got to owe him an apology, you know, because my story has been a little bit wrong because I was worse than him, you know, in my eyes, but I'm real grateful that Uncle David came to AA, and because there's been a chain reaction, you know, by him getting sober. And my whole family's getting it. You know, some of us get it, some of us go back, some of us come back. You know, but the bottom line is there was a seed planted and our lives, you know, there's been a lot of people's lives changed. You know, I'll just qualify real quickly, you know, that, you know, my last pretty much drunk was in Texas. And I drank a lot of beef eaters and kamikaze and beer, and the bartender bought me two drinks, and she called them a screaming orgasm. So, you know, I gave her the ow and downed it, you know, I go back to the table where this girl was at, and you know, in my wildest dream, I never thought that she was an undercover ATF officer. You know, I took pot to Texas with me, and they wanted me to sell them some of it. And thank my higher power that I didn't do it, because they give a whole lot of time in Texas. And her friend was undercover also when I got back there. He had his arm around her. And, you know, it just one thing led to another, and I ended up getting placed under arrest for impersonating a police officer. Alcohol. I became a cop that night, and you know, I was going to place that guy under arrest. And I thought I scared him, you know, and he just said, oh, I apologize, sir. I'll chill out. And he left and came back with a whole bunch of other cops. That's what alcohol does for me. It gets me arrested. I'm dual addicted. You know, I suffer from, I like drugs, I like alcohol. They come hand in hand, and but I'm going to tell you, first and foremost, man, my favorite is alcohol. Okay, that's what gets me every time. And I found a remedy to not drink no more, man. And that's to work the steps and talk to my sponsor and hang out with other people that are working a program. And, You know, I treat people how I want to be treated today. Ain't nobody owes me nothing. I got to give this away in order to keep it. It says to give it away freely. And that's what I do, man. I work with alcoholics that are suffering still. You know, I have the best life that I didn't even know that I could have a life like this, to be honest. You know, I work hard every day and I play just as hard on the weekends. I have a beautiful girlfriend. This gentleman's wife shared last month, and I was glad I was here. You know, her name's Michelle also. And their little story, man, it touched my heart, man. And it was like kind of how my life is a little bit, you know. And it was like, and I went and talked to this gentleman afterwards, and I shared with him because, you know, I get answers in the meetings that I go to, you know, to the problems that I'm coming upon from the older people that have been around, because they've been through what I'm fixing to go through, you know. And I don't have to suffer. I mean, I like to suffer sometimes. And I like to bang my head on the wall until I learn my lesson, you know. And usually my sponsor gives me the advice that I need, or, you know, if I call him soon enough, say, hey, I'm going through this, or, you know, his answer is right about it. 7 days time, your higher power will give you your answer. If not, we'll write some more. And, but he usually gives me his opinion. And he's usually almost right on the pinhead because he's been through it. You know, he knows that I'm not going to listen to the first time he tells me. Probably not the second time. And maybe the third time. You know, the only thing that I've done right in the last almost 10 years is I have not drank or used any drugs at all. I'm afraid to use aftershave that has alcohol in it. Okay, I'm afraid to take anything that I'm scared of it. But I don't live in fear because I've done the steps. The book says that I can go anywhere that my heart desires as long as I stay spiritually fit. You know, and I do. You know, I go a lot of places. You know, I work with suffering alcoholics. You know, if they call, man, I go. And that's my responsibility. You know, I get somebody to go with me and we go on a 12-step call. And I'll tell you what, man, the reward that I get out of that it's amazing, man. You know, I'm in the process of getting approved to go inside prison. That's my dream, man. That's one of my dreams. I have a lot of dreams today. You know, my dream ain't to get a couple gallons of whatever, you know. You know, at the end, it got to be the cheap stuff. You know, but my favorite drink is Beef Eaters. I love Beef Eaters, man, with two green olives in a glass. And I become real smart when I drink that. Man, oh, man. You know, but I'm indebted to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. That's why I go to a lot of meetings. I mean, I got like 3 meetings a week that I go to, and then the other meetings I go to, because I go almost 7 days a week, I go to the other program because I need to work on my drug problem too. You know, relate with some other people. You know, I don't know, man. I could just go. I could take the whole hour and a half or whatever it is, but I'm blessed to have what I have, man. I got, you know, I lived in my Uncle David Luper's house now for 15 months. I've been able to pay the rent every month to my cousin Bill, and on time. He's a good landlord. Sometimes, during the winter, there was 2 months that I was a little bit, didn't get to work because it rained. We needed the water. And I went out to Dale's house and worked in the rain with him. You know, he put me to work and knocked it right off the rent, man. And what a blessing, you know what I mean, that I have a cousin like that that cares, you know. I love that guy with all my heart. And I pray for him every day. You know, if you know who Dale L is, man, give him a call sometime. You know, I hate gossipers. I didn't get in here to talk shit about people because there's so much of that goes on out there in the disease. I got in this program to learn how to change my life. And that's what I'm doing today, man, is changing my life for the better. And if I got to waste my time talking about somebody else, I'm not doing my higher power's work, man. You know what I mean? But I do take inventories, believe that. Because I want to know who I want in my circle. And I'll tell you what, my circle is real small. I have a lot of acquaintances, but the people that are in my circle are only few. This guy back here in the back, he comes by my house, man, and I appreciate that. You know, and sometimes I feel like I'm all alone, even though I know I have a higher power in my life. You know, I've lived in that house for 15 months, and there's probably only four people that have came by there to visit me. And there's three of them in this room right now. You know, maybe I'm hard to get along with. Maybe if you don't like me, but it matters to me. I can tell you it doesn't, but it does. You know, I have feelings. Sometimes I have real baby feelings. You know, but sometimes my skin's like leather. You know, he saved my life, man. That's the given. I mean, that's the truth. You know, what can I do for AA, man? Whatever they ask, you know. They want me to speak, I'll speak. You know, I got a lot of crazy, funny stories. Been working on my language, you know, trying to keep it better. Because I believe that when I'm out there in the world, you know, I do solar all over this town in the valley. And it's not real cool when you go up the door and say, hey, how the F are you doing? I mean, excuse my language. You know, so I got to correct that. It ain't cool. That ain't professional. Because this thing's real loose. This is my worst enemy, my tongue. It's my worst enemy. But, you know, I've been getting better, man. I mean, my higher power, if I give it to him, he takes it. You know, he does. If I ask, that's what he wants me to surrender and ask. You know, what's it say? You got to surrender to win. And that's what I do, man. Every day is a surrender. And when I get up in the morning, man, I tell the grandfather, the higher power, whatever you want to call your higher power. You know, I have a couple names for mine. You know, every morning, man, hey, help me. My life is yours today. You know, I believe religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell. And I believe spirituality is for people who have already lived in hell. You know, and I'm coming out of there one day at a time. If you're new, all guys that said they're newcomers, hey man, give yourself a chance. You know, don't leave before the miracle happens. I mean, if you got one day, the miracle's already happening. You know, if you're an alcoholic like me, man, one day without a drink is a miracle. And then it gets a little easier. But I'll tell you this, that I know this to be a fact, that when the mental obsession hits, have a relationship with your higher power, because that's going to be your only defense. And I had that happen in February, man. And I'm so grateful that I'm plugged into my higher power, because he took me through a whole little circle. And I didn't drink and I didn't use. And I got to live another day sober. And that's what it's about. It's just one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats.
And remember, we don't have a PA system tonight, so be really quiet for our speaker, please. Let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome to our featured speaker, Pat.
I'm supposed to keep clapping until I get up here. My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to, first of all, thank Rick. He's the most gracious host I've ever had the pleasure of knowing, you know, doing one of these things. And he takes you out to dinner. And he can't beat free dinner, but he took Michelle and me out last month when she was here to speak, so I kind of got a double dip of Rick's hospitality, and I appreciate it. I also want to welcome the newcomers, Cameron and Charles. Welcome to AA. I don't know if you're brand new or returning or what, but I'm glad you're here. They say that the newcomer's the most important person in the meeting, and I say that's behind me. Because I need meetings today more than I've ever needed meetings. My sobriety date He is November 6th, 1997, and I've been sober since that day by the grace of God only. I don't take any credit for my sobriety. I know that when I tried to get sober in the past, I could never get sober. And it wasn't until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I began to get some kind of a grasp on that. And it wasn't easy. My story in Alcoholics Anonymous is probably like a lot of people's, but I came in originally in 1987. I was 29 years old. I'd been living on the streets of Fresno for 2 years in my car. And I lived on my streets in my car because it's got to be somebody's fault, right? When you're new, it's not your fault you're living in your car. It's got to be somebody's fault. So whose fault it was my wife, my first wife. She left me for another man. And I was so angry that she left me, and that I swore that I'd never work another day in my life. Because if I worked, that means that bitch would get my money. That's the way I thought in those days. I didn't realize I was going to live this long. I had to go back to work eventually. But I was so angry that, and so disgusted at myself, because I wasn't a good husband. You know, I don't blame her for leaving me today. Back then I did. But I wasn't a good father. I wasn't a good son. I couldn't keep a job. We were constantly moving in and out of grandma's house or mom's house or dad's house, somebody's house. We were never living in our own house. And I dragged my family around, you know, like that for a good long time. So eventually when she left me, I decided that was it. I was going to step away from life for a while and do what I like to do, and that was to drink. And in order to drink without a job, you have to steal. So I had to steal quite a bit, and I went to jail a lot. I don't know how many times exactly, but I know that I was in there more than I care to be. And it wasn't until I was on the streets in my car, I was running around Fresno, you know, without a job, nothing to do. You're looking for trouble is what you're doing, and that's what I did. I was driving around, and in those days, the quarter car washes. A lot of people used to frequent quarter car washes back then, I guess. And there used to be some grates at the quarter car washes that would lift up. People, I guess, didn't know they lifted up, but you could lift them up, and you could find like quite a few quarters in there if you were lucky that day. And so that's what I was doing. I was at a car wash, looking, you know, mining for quarters. And this girl pulled up, and it was a best friend of my first wife's, and she took one look at me and said, "What happened?" And I told her the truth as I knew it then. I said, she left me for another man, and you know, that's why I'm here. You know, and she said, "Come to my house, I'll help you." And she went to my, I went to her house. I had a girlfriend who was a lady of the night. She was my running partner at the time. I took her to her family house in San Joaquin. I dropped her off, and I moved into this girl's house that day. It was like, you know, no time to think about it. There's a free place to live here. And so I went and moved in there, and within 3 months, she tried to help me. But within 3 months, I had her drinking as much as I was drinking and doing a lot of other things, too. And her family recognized that. They saw that, and they stuck her into it. They did an intervention, and they put her into a treatment center. And back in 1987, there was a treatment center called the ARC in Clovis. And I know Sid knows that because Sid's an old road dog of mine from the Bridge Group from a long time ago. But they put her in the ARC, and I didn't have much conversation with her when she was in there because they try to isolate you, keep you away from bad people like me. But when I did talk to her, she told me that it was fun, that recovery was fun. And I couldn't imagine being sober ever being fun. But somehow or another, she planted a seed. And I also knew that if I was going to keep her in my life, I probably had to quit drinking and drugging too. So I tried to get into the same treatment center she was in. They wouldn't let me. So I went and checked into another one in town. And it was a one-year live-in program. And I'd already gone to a couple meetings before I went in there. And I stayed there for 30 days. And then I left, and I went directly to the other program, the other 12-step program, Narcotics Anonymous, and I got sober. For the first 11 months, I was stark raving sober. I was a lunatic. This one guy called it nuttier than a squirrel turd. You know, that's how crazy I was. I was nuts. But I was sober. And I'd never been sober before since the time I was 16. Because when I was 16, I started drinking. I drank from the time I was 16 to the time I was 29 on a daily basis. I don't remember ever being sober once. Matter of fact, I don't remember a whole lot, let alone being sober. It was almost like a blackout, but my whole 20s, I don't remember a lot of that. And now it made for a really nice, easy four-step, but as you stick around here a while, more will be revealed. So what happened was I got into this program, and I left, and I stayed sober for 11 months, and then I wasn't working steps, so they have something around here called dry drunk. You know, untreated alcoholism, and what that is it just means that I'm not drinking, I'm not doing anything to take the edge off. I'm edgy, you know, and so I was really edgy at around 11 months, and I picked a fight with that girl, and for a reason. I you guys probably have done the same thing. You know, I picked a fight for the sole purpose of being able to get mad enough to storm out of the house and go drink, and that's what I did, and I didn't get back into the program for a few months, but during that time. They say that a real tough place to be in is being out there drunk, wishing you were sober again. And I've felt that. I've experienced it. And being drunk and loaded out there in that world after you've been to AA, it was the most lonely place on earth for me. I would hole up in a motel room for days at a time and just drink. And while I was drinking, after I got here, I figured I might as well pick up the tools. There's nothing else to do, so I had a journal, and I started writing in that journal, God, please help me. God, please help me. God, please help me. And I don't know how many pages I filled up before Reyes showed up. There's a gentleman down here in your part neck of the woods named Reyes. He used to live in Fresno at the time, and I knew him. He was an acquaintance at AA. And he came looking for me in this motel room, and he said the same thing that that girl said. He said, Pat, what happened? And I told him the truth, because I'd been around the program a while. I told him the truth, and I said that that I'm in a relapse and I can't stop. And he said, come to my house, I'll help you. And his help was different from the girl's help. it was less nurturing, let's put it that way. Because, you know, Ray let me suffer, you know, and that's what I had to do. I had to suffer. And this was the third time, you know. This wasn't right after I got here. This was... this was the third time when I came back in. I'd been in this program 11 months. I relapsed. I stayed sober for 4 years because during that relapse, I caught a case. I was in Madera County cashing stolen checks, and I ended up getting arrested for forgery, brandishing a firearm, loaded gun in city limits, assault with a firearm. I didn't shoot anybody, but I pulled it out. And when I pulled it out, you know, the assistant store manager. He said, you know, we know these checks are stolen because I was there the day before. I'm not a real bright criminal, but I was there cashing the check the day before. And when I went back the next day, he said, we know these checks are stolen and we're going to hold you for the police. And he wasn't a cop. I knew my rights. He couldn't hold me for anybody. So I said, you're not going to hold me for anybody. I'm walking out of here. And I pulled the gun out of my pocket. It was a 25, little 25 Saturday Night Special. And I pointed it right at him, and it was loaded. And I don't know if the guy was stupid or he knew I wouldn't shoot him, or the gun was so little he knew it wouldn't hurt him if I shot him. But anyway, we got into altercation. We went over these stacks of dog food and rock salt in front of these plate glass windows, and then we went through the plate glass windows, my face first. We ended up out in the parking lot with me getting the shit beat out of me by the butt of a shotgun that the assistant store manager had in the trunk of his car. And the last thing that I remember before going to the hospital was. A cop car pulling up, you know, out of my peripheral, and this cop jumping out of his car with a billy club, and then that was it. I don't remember anything. I saw stars. You know those stars they show in the cartoons? Those are real. You know, that wasn't somebody's imagination. That shit's real. So I saw those stars. I went to the hospital that night. That was Thanksgiving night, 1989. And if it wasn't a holiday, I probably wouldn't remember the date. But I know it was Thanksgiving night, and I was in there, and had seven felony counts against me. I knew I was done. I knew I was going to go to prison. I had, you know, other counts before that, and I really didn't care at that point. I just wanted to be sober again. I knew that I liked my life sober. I liked the way it made me feel, and I wanted sobriety back more than anything. So in that jail cell that night, I surrendered, and I asked God to help me. And I said, I don't care what it takes. If I got to go to prison for 10 years, I'll go to prison. I'll do whatever you want, but please let me stay sober. Please let me stay sober. And that was an earnest prayer, and I meant it, you know, and I got to stay sober. I got to go to prison, you know, and prison's not as bad as they say it is, you know. I mean, you can drop the soap on occasion and I feel molested. But I went down there, and Alcoholics Anonymous was in prison. And so was the other program, and I joined. I became a member of both fellowships down there in prison, and also got into service, you know, because I knew that getting into service was good. So I was a sergeant at arms for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was vice chairman for Narcotics Anonymous. And what that meant was I got to push a coffee cart from my dorm to the meeting. Nothing. It didn't give me anything else. But it gave me a title, and also, you know, gave me the ability to feel like I was a part of something down there. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, the H&I members that were on those panels, they would come in, they would volunteer their weekends and come in and do things like four-step workshops. And I was able to do my very first four-step inventory down there on the yard at CRC, and I picked a temporary sponsor. They encouraged us to get temporary sponsors. I did my first fifth step on that yard, and when I came back in, you know, our housing unit there, it was a Sunday morning, and the guy that I rode down there with from Madera, his name was Mike, he was sitting on his bunk. And I walked in the door, and this guy was, he took one look at me, and his eyes got big as saucers, and his mouth dropped wide open. He goes, Pat, he goes, you're glowing. And I felt like I was glowing. Now, it could have been the sun behind me. You know, I was going through a door leading to the outside, so it could have been the sun. But he said I was glowing, and I felt like I was glowing. And I think it was a spiritual experience. I really did. And so when I got out of there, I stayed sober for 4 years. They told me to get a sponsee. They told me to get in the service, get a sponsor, get a sponsee, go to meetings, read the big book. They told me all that stuff. And I did it, you know, and I got out, and I started going to a lot of meetings. I lived in Fresno. I lived in Fresno at the time, so I was going to a lot of meetings in Clovis and Fresno, and there was this one meeting at the old winery on Clovis Avenue, and that winery housed two meetings. It housed two fellowships, the AA fellowship and the NA fellowship, and they'd have meetings all the time, all day long, it seemed like. And so I'd go to that meeting, and I'd be a part of, and I got my first sponsee there. The guy's name is Jack Daniels, and he's still sober to this day. I'm not taking any credit for it, but that was his name, and that was my first sponsee. But I still see him occasionally in Fresno. So I was staying sober. I was doing the deal, and eventually I got busy with making up for lost time, you know, because when I spent 16 years of my life, you know, partying, you know, there's other people were like working, building retirement, you know, doing buying houses, doing stuff like that. I was flat broke when I got here at 29. And so, you know, I had nothing going on. But anyway, so after that 4 years, I got restless, irritable, and discontent. It's the root of the disease. I was untreated. I wasn't working any steps. I had a sponsor. I never used them. I wasn't going to meetings much anymore, and I wasn't sponsoring anybody but that one guy. And I think, you know, he was pretty much cruising on his own and, you know, going on his own for quite a while. But anyway, what happened was I got restless, irritable, and discontent. I got angry, and I got drunk. And that was after 4 years. Now, at that four-year mark, before that, I drank. I signed up for the 1995 World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, a lot of you guys have been around here a while know what that is. Every 5 years, Alcoholics Anonymous has a big party. And they call it a conference, convention. But there were 70,000 sober alcoholics from all over the world in San Diego at the conference that year. And I went down there drunk. That's not very fun when you're going to AA conference. But I went down there drunk with the sole purpose of getting sober. I wanted to get struck sober in this big conference. That was my plan. We were talking about that earlier, taking your sobriety day. So I went down there. I didn't get sober. I stayed drunk the whole time, picked fights, you know, stayed in the bar. But when I was getting ready to leave that conference, I talked to a member. You know, he had a Harley Davidson, and I was down there in a car, but on a vacation, but But the guy had a Harley Davidson, I rode, so I talked to him. You know, I talked to a lot of people like that, because I relate or whatever. It's my people. but anyway, I told him. I got honest with him. And he said, go back to the next meeting you can find and tell him. He goes, they don't care. I'm going to guarantee you, they don't care. Just go tell them, get honest, and get back in the program. You know, that's the only way you're going to be able to do it. So that's what I did. We were heading back up the coast, and I stopped at Harbor Lights in Morro Bay, and I got honest with that group and told them the story. They all laughed that I was drunk at a conference, and glad I could entertain them. So I got back in. I stayed sober for 2 more years. Same thing happened, making up for lost time. I was going to school full-time, working on a bachelor's degree. I had a full-time job trying to, reunify my family. I had 3 kids that I hadn't seen in a long time, trying to be a dad to them, trying to be a dad to my new kids from my new family. It was tough, man. It was tough staying sober. I couldn't make my sponsor, the last sponsor, he gave me a priority list. There's no way my priorities were anywhere in sync with the priorities that I live by today. My priorities today are God, AA, and working with others. But I think they're all synonymous because, for me, I found God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't come here to see Him because God's in me. I take Him with me wherever I go. But that's my priority, God, AA, and working with others. My second priority is my job. And then my third priority is my family, fourth is friends, and five is hobbies. And I asked him, right after he gave me that list, I said, I always thought family came first. And he goes, well, how's that working for you? and he goes, look, he goes, you're an alcoholic. He goes, without sobriety, you can't stay at a job. I proved that to myself. I could never get a job and keep it because I'd always show up drunk on the job. He goes, and without a job, you can't support your family. So what good are you without a job? So your family is third on the priority list because you have things to do to be able to take care of them first. You have to take care of yourself first. So my priorities were all out of whack. I got drunk in 2 years, got back in the program, got drunk again after 2 years, and then I came back in the program November 5th, 1997. And where I was at... I didn't tell you this, but those 2 years I was homeless in Fresno, I spent a lot of that time on Motel Drive. And the reason why I was down there was, I don't know, that's where the hookers were, and that's where, the hustle was. I was down there, hustling. And so, but 10 years later, after trying Alcoholics Anonymous my way, I was about right back in the same place, praying to die. And that's when Ray showed up at the door. He showed up at the door, he knocked, and he said, what happened? I told him the truth. And so for me, what he did for me was he took me to his house, and for 3 days, he had me get in the hot bathtub. You know, he brought me water and food. He kept a waste basket next to the bed, so, I didn't have to run to the bathroom. I could throw up right there. How convenient, right? And so I was doing that. I threw up one night. I don't know what time it was, but I threw up. I was on my knees next to the bed, and the windowsill was right there. After I was done throwing up, I crawled over to the windowsill, and I was looking out into the cold, foggy night. It was November 5th, so it was it was cold and foggy. And I was saying this prayer. I said it out loud, and I said, God, please let me die. I don't want to live anymore. Life is too painful. And when I said that prayer, I was filled with self-pity. The book says, oozing from every pore. That's what I felt like. But little did I know it, Reyes has a sense of humor, and he burst into merriment behind me in the doorway. He started laughing at me crying, next to the windowsill. And it pissed me off, it really pissed me off. And I didn't say anything to him, but he was laughing, and I think he knew that it affected me that way. Because he stopped laughing, and he told me something that I hope I never forget. Because whatever he told me changed my life. And he said, Pat, you're not going to die. He said that you're going to live so that you can do for somebody else what I'm doing for you. And I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, and I didn't know that. I didn't know it was not a get back my shit program. See, because I thought you came to AA and you built this big, nice life, and the person with the biggest house, the nicest car, is the best sober, the best sobriety. I don't know why I thought that. I just did. And so what I did was I left this house after 3 days. I went to a morning maintenance meeting in Fresno. There's 7 a.m. meetings in Fresno, and I was going to them a lot. And I went to that meeting, and I was done, you know. This guy named Howdy, Howard Collins, he was real crusty, you know. The guy was, he just was crusty, you know. He didn't have any compassion for the newcomer or anything. He was one of those old tough love kind of AA guy, you know. And thank God he was. Because when I came in here, I was sensitive. And, yeah. and thin skin. And anything, you know, you said would affect me. I don't know why, but I just was really sensitive. And he used to call me lab monkey all the time. Well, because when I got here, I was pretty much strung out like a lab monkey. But he called me that. That was his name for me. And after about 3 months, I got tired of it. And I said, you know, Howdy, I said, you're going to have to stop calling me that. You know, I was testing my boundaries or something. I said, you got to stop calling me that. He says, I'm not strung out anymore, and I'm not a lab monkey. And he goes, whoa. He goes, somebody's getting in touch with some feelings, you know. And so, but he told me, he goes, we're sensitive. He goes, I say that only because I like you. He says, I don't give people a hard time that I don't like. He goes, I leave them alone. He goes, because I like you, I'm giving you a hard time. And he goes, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have to develop a thicker skin. You know, and I understand what he meant by that. And so I'm really grateful I got that sponsor, because he took me to this book. Every sponsor that I've had before that, prior to that, it's not their fault. They didn't have me working the steps out of this book. They had me working out a 12x12, or they had me working out of some work step manual or something like that. And I wasn't getting anything. I wasn't getting the results. I feel good after I went to meetings, but I didn't get it at home. You know, I wasn't feeling the love from God at home. I wasn't feeling it. And so when Howie started sponsoring, he started taking me through this book. He showed me something in there that I'd never seen before, and it was in the fourth step. And see, I always thought the fourth step had to do with, admitting all the bad things I ever did in my life, kind of like an admission of sins. I was born and raised Catholic, so I'd been to a number of confessions, and I thought that's what it was like. And the first few sponsors that I had, that's what it was like, because I wrote down the bad shit that I did, and I told them. But I didn't get the results, because in the fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's something called a fourth column. And in that fourth column, I get to look at my part. Not in my part in what they did, although I may have a small part in, you know, doing the things that we do to make people piss us off. But my part in the resentment. See, the resentment is the only thing I have power over, the only thing I can really manage, knowing what I'm doing to keep the resentment alive. And when he showed me in there, it's only a matter of a couple things: selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, or inconsideration. Then it made it real easy for me to see where I nursed these grudges for years, because I wanted to stay angry, because feeling the anger gave me a sense of power or control over the people I was mad at. And they didn't feel a thing. They didn't know it. But I got to see what I was doing to myself through this inventory process, and it freed me. You know, I started getting some of the promises. My shoulders started relaxing a little bit. I was able to take a deep breath. And let it out. I was able to just relax, and I got a spiritual awakening after that fifth step, because it liberated me. See, what it did for me was it gave me the tools that said I never have to be angry at anybody ever again if I don't want to. Now, it takes a lot of faith to do that, because for me, the solution to fear and anger and all that, jealousy, rage, is faith. And so I have to practice that. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's given me the ability to keep my faith. And so this sponsor, he saved my life. And I don't share this a lot. You know, I kept that guy for about 11 years. And he did a good job. He was a good sponsor. But at about 10 years, he got honest with me. Now, he wasn't married, but he was in a live-in marriage kind of a thing, you know, common law marriage. And, you know, that was his partner, and I knew her. And so I, when he told me that he had cheated on his wife, I got a real strong judgment against him. And I told him that I needed to look for somebody that was a little more spiritual. I don't know why. I mean, because I've learned a lot since then. I don't put sponsors on a pedestal anymore. I don't put Bill and Bob on a pedestal anymore. I know that we're all human, and we're all prone to failure and mistakes. But what happened was I let that guy go, and I got another sponsor. And that sponsor, he just dropped out of AA. I don't know where he went. But I currently have a sponsor, and I sponsor people today. But so what happened with all this whole story about me coming back in after 4 years, on November 6th, 1997, it started a journey for me. I had, like I said, I'd been here before, so I knew what it was like being in and around AA, not working steps, just going to meetings. But coming back, you know, being an active member, actually, you know, taking a service position, service commitment, actually sponsoring guys, asking guys if they had sponsors, and you know, signing them up and getting them working through the steps. You know, that's what made me feel like I was a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what gave me a sense of belonging to this program. And so, so I got busy, and in my first 11 months, you know, this sobriety, I started sponsoring men. I got my first sponsee I was 3 months sober, and this kid came up to me at a meeting, that morning maintenance meeting, and asked me to sponsor him. And, you know, I was running everything by my sponsor at that time. I didn't want to trust my thinking on anything. That screwed my life up. And I knew it. And so I went and asked my sponsor if it was okay if I sponsored him. He said, absolutely. He goes, if you got 10 days sober, he goes, you look for a guy with 9 days and tell him how you got day 10. He goes, you're never too new to help another alcoholic. And that was something that was new to me, too. See, I didn't know that. I thought you had to work all the steps, get your diploma or your, you know, and then you could sponsor people. I didn't know nothing about this, and I didn't even really care to ask because I had reservations. I wasn't done yet. So when I was done and I got ready to jump into this program, completely give myself over to the simple program, I got busy. And in the last 18 and a half years, I've had the pleasure of being in a number of different service positions. I was the webmaster for our central office in Fresno. I was the webmaster for the NCCAA for like 6 years. I've taken meetings. I've been on the board at central office. I was on the board at CAP, which is not AA. It's a treatment center. But I got into service in other areas, too, just to be a better part of my community, you know, to give to my community. And I've been doing all these things, but probably the most important thing for me was taking a new guy through this book. And see, because they're not numbered. They don't tell you in here where step one is, where step two is. You got to have somebody that has known where that they found, you know, the answer to those steps in the book, and to have them show you. And so that's what I've been doing. And I don't say this to brag. But I'm going to say it because the people that I have sponsored have saved my life. I started writing down their names back in 1997. For some reason, I kept writing them. And I have had the honor and privilege of sponsoring about 160 men and women. I do that because I like to keep at least one newcomer on the south side of that fifth step, so I have something to look forward to. Because what happens with usually the people that I sponsor is once they get past 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 and we're accountable to each other on the ninth step, then they're already relying on God. They don't need me to tell them how to tie their shoe. And so... because it works. You know, the program works. Before you know it, you'll be relying on God. And so I've had the honor and the privilege of doing that. And I also sponsor women. And I don't know if you guys, the guys down here sponsor women, or you've fallen prey to that men stick with women, women stick with women. Well, I'd like to ask you a question. How did the very first woman ever end up in AA if a man can't sponsor a woman? And my sponsor, my grand sponsor, Dave Marquez, I called him up and asked him when this girl had asked me to sponsor her. Because I was going to ask, I didn't know I'd never sponsored a girl, so I figured I better run that by my sponsor. And Dave told me, he goes, I sponsor women. And he goes, and the reason I do that is because I don't want to stand before my Creator someday with no answer when he asked me, did you help those alcoholics I sent your way? And so I never say no to anybody that asked me to sponsor them. And because it saved my life. So that's my service work. I do it gladly and joyfully. Now, one of the things my sponsor was doing with me when I first got sober is he wanted to see me in a meeting every week. And I was going to different meetings than he was a lot of times. But he had a group of men. All of his sponsees would meet once a week on Monday. And they would get out the book. They would read the book together. I'd read the book with my sponsor. We'd share a little bit. And we'd go on our merry way. It's a couple-hour meeting every Monday night. And eventually, his sponsor had him stop doing that because, I don't know why, his sponsor told him that he was playing court or something like that. I don't know. His sponsor was an asshole. But anyway, my sponsor told me to keep having the meetings because it allowed me to meet with my sponsees once a week. I got to see what they were doing. And it really helped. And the thing is, I started that like at 3 months in my apartment with the one sponsee that I got. And within that year, I had six sponsees that were all meeting at my apartment after a Wednesday night meeting that led out at 9 o'clock. The men's meeting that we had went from 9 o'clock to midnight usually, you know, every Wednesday night. And there was guys that had to get up and go to work at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and they would be there every week. That meeting's still going on, and we've had to rent a church, you know, to hold it, but it's not an AA meeting. You know, we study the AA big book. It's a sponsor-sponsee meeting. We allow people to come, if they're interested, to come one time, and if they'd like to get sponsored by somebody in that group, then they can pick a sponsor and return next week so that they study the book with their sponsor. And it seems to work good. I'm glad I'm doing it. A lot of times, you know, when you think about it, I've been going every week for the last 18 and a half years to this meeting. And when you think about it, that's a lot of time in a meeting. And I got to know guys, you know, and when you have 160 guys you sponsor come through there at one point or another, you know, there's a lot of different faces that show up. And now what we do is the guys I sponsor are required to be there. It's a commitment meeting. And the guys they sponsor are required to be there as a commitment meeting. Sometimes we have 35 guys at that meeting. You know, because I'd like to say all the guys that I got sober, I tell people I have 100% success rate in sponsorship. And it's not because those 160 guys and girls are still sober. It's because I'm still sober. And I know that sounds a little arrogant, but it's the truth. Me helping other people is what's kept me sober. There's no other reason for it, because those 10 years around here, I wasn't sponsoring anybody. It's like, don't waste my time. You know, I'd hide if somebody asked for service work. You know, but that made all the difference in my life. It's why I'm here. And I know, see, I've done a lot of research. I've been to every world convention. Since that 1995 world convention, I've been to every world convention. It was in San Diego, then it was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Toronto, Canada, and it was Texas. We went to Texas, and then Atlanta, Georgia. You know, and I've had the opportunity to go to every one of them sober, except the first one. And I'm grateful for that. So I've got a chance to hear a lot of good stories. And one of the stories that I like is the story where Bob, when Bill first got sober, he was going around to bars and hospitals and getting people, you know, trying to get people sober. And he was working with these alcoholics trying to get them sober. And he'd bring them to their house, and they'd burn his couch and steal his lamps to go buy booze. And he told Lois after a few months of doing that, he said, Lois, I'm going to give up this helping the drunks business. He goes, not one of these guys is staying sober. And she said, Bill, you better not ever give it up. She said, they may not be staying sober, but you've never stayed sober this long before. And so he kept doing it. That's Lois saved my life. It wasn't Bill and Bob, it was Lois. So thank you, Lois. And so that's why I do it. That's why I work, you know, with new people, and that's why I work so hard in sponsorship. The other thing this group of men does is every year we do a men's retreat. And the first few years we were going up to the mountains, and doing that men's camp out, you know, and it was nice, really, you know, macho, crusty. We have to sit on a campfire and be men and tell stories and stuff. And we were doing that. It was fun. But there was this one guy that was a tree surgeon. You know, he was an arborist. And he's in trees all day long. And he was sitting up there. We were sitting on a campfire. And he goes, "Why are we up here?" He goes, "I'm in trees every day." He goes, "We should be at the coast." And so that next year, we started booking a house on the beach at the coast. And every year, we've taken, you know, 15 to 25 guys over to the coast to spend a weekend, you know, with each other. And what we do over there is we go to meetings. There's a lot of good speaker meetings and stuff over there on the Central Coast. But we also teach the newer guys how to do the 11-step prayer meditation. We do it together every morning. And also, if people want, we'll do like a 4-step workshop there during the day. But we have a blast, and everybody looks forward to it every year. It's just so much fun, you know, and it's a joy to be a part of that group, you know. It's and I've asked the guys because they, you know, since I'm the guy who started that meeting, some of them treat me like it's my meeting, and it's not. I let everybody else run it, you know, the way you run a normal AA meeting. But I've asked them if they will ever want to give that meeting up, or maybe make it an open meeting and invite other just the public in, you know. And they say no. The people like having the accountability, because every week we tell each other what we're doing for service. We tell each other how many meetings we made. You know, we bring up problems. If we have any problems, we share about the problems we have. But that's very rare. We try to encourage people to keep their problems to their sponsor and to God, because really, you know, most of the time just complaining about them doesn't make the problem go away. It just makes you feel worse. So that meeting's been going on. How long have I been? A few more minutes? 25. Okay. Well, I got a few more stories. So what I like to do for my, what it's like today. What it was like then was, there's a poem that I like to say that kind of describes that. And it was a poem by a Russian guy named Rumi. And I heard this at a speaker meeting. Nothing I ever say anyway is original. But this poem is by a guy named Rumi, and it goes like this. Forget it. It was not that important. Something about banging on the door, wanting to know reasons. Wanting to know the reasons. Why? You know, why anything? So he's banging on the door, wanting to know reasons, and the door opens, and he discovers he was banging from the inside. And that's what I felt like I was doing the whole time. I felt like I was, like, screaming in this voice to, like, know what's wrong with me, and all this time, all it was just alcoholism. And I should have been glad, and I am, like I am today, because alcoholism is the only disease that you can get that leaves the sufferer in better condition than they were before they had it. That's why I like alcoholism. It's a good disease to have. And what it's like today is Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much. When I made my amends to my mom suffered right along with me. And I'm going to tell you what, I had no idea how bad she was suffering. If anybody in this room has any alcoholic or addict kids, God bless you. My mom suffered with me the whole time. And when I made my amends to her, the only thing she wanted was for me to be sober and clean. She said, just stay clean and sober. I don't want you ever to go back to that life. And by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to give that to her. 3 years ago, she died, and she saw me, you know, live the last days on earth sober, right across the street from her, because I wanted to stay close to her. I harmed that woman in so many ways, not physically ever, but emotionally and financially. It just... Nobody should ever treat anybody that way. And so I was able to make amends to her, and life has been good. Alcoholics Anonymous reunited my whole family. My kids wanted nothing to do with me. My three kids from my first family, my first wife, I've been married 4 times, divorced 3. I got a keeper now. I'm going to keep Michelle. So that marriage and divorce is expensive. But I've been able to be a part of my family, you know, to be a father to my 3 kids that I lost, to be a father to a daughter that's never seen me drunk. She's 19, and when she was a baby, I was just getting sober, so she never really had any recollection of me being so drunk. I've been able to go to college. Something that I always want to do, was to get a degree. And I don't know why. Nobody in my family had a degree. You know, I was the first person to ever go to college. And I always wanted to do that. And I talked to members of AA in Fresno. We go to coffee after the meetings. And there was this one guy named Pete Apke. And he would say, he goes, what are you going to be when you grow up, Patty? And I was like already 30. He called me Patty and asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, I have no idea. He goes, well, you should go to school. And I go, well, how do you know what to do in school if you don't know what you're going to be when you grow up? He goes, it doesn't matter. He goes, get a degree in pig farming. He goes, all the degree is going to do is show your future employer that you're willing to complete a task. And it's like, what a concept. I never knew that because I'd never completed tasks anyway. I didn't think it was that important. And so I went to school. And for 10 years, I went to every semester of school in this program. For 10 years, I was going to school, some of the times drunk. I thought it was really cool because I was kind of in and out of sobriety, but one of the times I fell out of sobriety, I thought it was really cool because there was a bar. They serve alcohol right there on campus, and I thought that was really convenient. But I was able to get my degree. I was able to get a job that I absolutely love today, working for the County of Fresno as a systems analyst. I like the numbers, and I like to analyze things and statistics and stuff, so it fits me. I love my job. And I've been able to clear away the wreckage of my past, those three wives, and I've been able to invite my brand new shiny wife into my life, and she's in the program, and we have fun. You know, our whole life it revolves around Alcoholics Anonymous friends, people, and looking to see what we can do to be a service to new people and to other alcoholics. We also ride motorcycles. I'm glad Michelle likes to ride motorcycles a lot because I like packing, my girl in the back, and we've been all over the place on that bike, and we do sober rides. We only ride with sober people, and so I know Anita and Nora get to join us a lot of times. So I get to know people all over the state, really, and it's a real joy. And I go to a lot of conventions. I think conventions are important because not only do you get to hear good speakers, it gives you the opportunity to see how big this thing is. This is a worldwide fellowship. And, every one of those world conferences I was at, there were over 75,000 people in one room saying the Lord's Prayer together. And if you've ever had the opportunity to experience that, you'll know what I mean. Your hair stands up on the back of your neck, and it's electrifying. And I don't like missing that. It recharges me for some reason, and I just get recharged, and I love going to them. But we'll be going to one here pretty soon in Las Vegas. And grass is going to be there. I think maybe you need it too. But these conventions are a lot of fun. So if you're new and you're looking for stuff to do, just go online and look for an AA convention or something to go to because they're all over. It's a real hoot. The other thing that I got to do, see, I would have never been here to be able to see any of my grandkids be born. You know, I was close to death at age 29. And I have a... I have grandkids, man. And I'm a great grandpa. Well, I don't have any great grandkids, but I'm a great grandpa. I love my grandkids. And my grandkids, I have two little girls. My son has two little girls, and they call me Peepaw for some reason. I don't like that name, but they call me Peepaw. And they love me. Every time they see me, they come running. And then my oldest daughter has three kids as well, and they're doing great. And they love me as well, too, you know. But the real miracle, with my kids and my grandkids is with my daughter. I had a daughter who followed me, followed my path. She was kind of like an addict for a while, and then I took her to a world convention in San Diego. It was an NA world convention, and I think that we scared her. I think that the people there scared her so much she quit. She quit going to meetings, and she quit drinking, and quit doing drugs. And so, but she followed me, in my path in life because I inspired her. She said that, the reason she went to college was because I went to college, and the reason my son went to college is because I went to college. But that girl there, when she got her degree, she got a good job. She's doing great, but she could never have kids. She had something wrong with her, some female problem. She could never have kids. And here recently with her husband, they tried to have kids again and with fertility stuff, and they're going to have twins. And it's like, it freaks me out because I get weirded out thinking about one kid inside a woman's stomach, let alone two. But I'm really grateful because they're going to be coming out to see their grandpa here pretty soon too. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much, you guys. I could talk forever on the blessings that I've been given. But if I lived to be 100 years old, I wouldn't live long enough to be able to pay back Alcoholics Anonymous for everything you guys have done for me. I love you guys and I appreciate you in my life. And keep coming back. I will too. Thank you.